I want to own this for our public. I need your help. I need you guys to go to the GoFundMe page and please fucking please, for God's sake, can you donate to this play? Also, come see the play. It's very funny. Cassidy did it. I'm directing it. These actors are so funny. SixthLineStudios.org to get your tickets. There's a discount code that if you message us, if you email us at
allanswerspod@gmail.com,
I will give you the discount code for cheaper tickets. If you want just normal price tickets, SixthLineStudios.org and click ticks. And then if you can click the GoFundMe link that's attached to this episode, it would really, really help a lot. We could use your help.
Welcome to that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions you're asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's bask in it. To top it off, the host, all the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Or we could just start talking now about something else.
That's true. We could just begin right here and just review a little bit.
Yeah.
We could even tell the truth about what we just what just happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
That might be a good idea.
Hmm. That's cool.
If we just go, boop, starting now.
Uh-huh.
All right. We just had a long conversation where we said a lot of things that we realized were not necessarily for public consumption. In total.
Yeah.
So we decided to start over.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll just say a little bit. You've had a really hard fucking day.
Yeah. Hard day.
As a human.
As a person. And here, I'll try to say things. Like, I had the kind of day where I felt like everything that occurred in this day was evidence that I'm just bad at being a person on Earth.
Oh, God.
Like, I don't know how to do earthing. How do you be a person? I don't know. I seem to be able to do weird things that are kind of interesting, but I don't seem to know how to just do basic shit that normal people can do. Like, just be on time and remember where you're supposed to be and call the people at the right time and have the right amount of money in your bank account when it's time for the money to be there. And,
yeah,
you know, just like life stuff. And it makes me think of, and one example that we can talk about is that I was having an emotional meltdown about some practical things in my life. And because I was having an emotional meltdown about failing at life, I was...
Failing what? To show up for our appointment.
I was like 25 minutes late to record this. And then Eric and I were walking and he was being a generous boyfriend and listening to me melt down and I was crying and then it was raining. And then I was like, I had left my phone at home, failing again. So I couldn't even text Cassidy to be like, I'm so sorry, I'm running late. So then Eric's trying to text him through Facebook and we're doing all this. Anyway, just like it makes me think of, this is in my human design chart. I have, okay, let's make this practical for people. let's gain anything from this. I have, so when you have a hanging gate, remember if you're looking at your human design chart, folks, the little lines that come off your centers that don't go all the way across between two centers, those are called gates. If it goes all the way across, that's called a channel. When you have a hanging gate off of an open center, that's those, all the gates that hang off your open centers tell you the story of the curriculum of your life. What will you be learning about in this life? What will the challenges of your life be? It's all written there in the chart.
Yeah.
Here's a nice plug for you to get your chart read.
Wait, while we're on that subject?
Yeah.
Can I read something to the people?
Yes, please.
I know you feel like you've been a great failure at life today, but let's read a thing that makes us feel good about ourselves.
Okay.
Our podcast episode that just came out this last weekend. So for you listeners, it'll be 2 weeks ago, but whatever. We had our reflector. We had the unicorn reflector on the cast, and then she posted on her whatever stories or whatever on one of those social medias.
Mm-hmm.
little picture of our podcast, and it said, I was a guest on a podcast all about human design and my unicornness. I come on 42 minutes in. This was probably the most validating afternoon of my life and has changed me in such a huge way. Thank you for connecting me with Katie and Cassidy. So
she said more than that, right?
No, that was it.
Oh.
That's all that was said in the post.
Wait a minute. Because you sent it to me. Hold on.
I did send it to you.
Well, so this is to my point, though. So to finish my thought, which I was,
yeah.
I wasn't done, but thank you for that.
Yeah.
But
sorry.
It exactly proves my point, which is this. It's a perfect example. So when you have a gate hanging off of an open center, read, you want to get the book. This is for the listener, The Definitive Guide to Human Design. And then you open up the book and look for all the gates you have, the name of the gate, gate 21, gate 43, they're all numbers, and read about the gates hanging off your open centers, because those are the challenges you'll face in your life, and it's all written there. Now, I had a reading years ago with my human design teacher. I have one hanging gate off of an open center, only one.
Yeah.
One little curriculum item.
And?
To give you an example of how this can go, I had a client a few days ago who had 13 pieces of curriculum. You can have...
There's a lot to learn in this lifetime.
And if you think about our reflector friend, since she has no defined centers, any gate she has is her curriculum. So she had like 14 pieces of curriculum.
Yeah.
The learning lessons of your life. My teacher, just to give you a sense of this, when she was talking about my gate hanging off my open center, she was like, yeah, that's a this is a chart of a person learning how to be a person. This is a person who will be learning about what is it to do 3D life.
Yep.
And I was like, well, you just summed it up. That's everything I've been going through for 46 years. Correct.
Wow.
And it's what it is it's the gate of control coming off of an open ego. So the open ego, as we recall, the not self theme of the open ego is when I feel hurt, envy, or lack, I get busy trying to prove my worth and value, right? Now, here's another piece of information to really get everybody listening. This is a little hard to articulate, so bear with me. The not self theme of the open center that you have hanging gates hanging off of, sorry, I'm trying to pull it up so I can read gate 21 to everybody to use this as an example while I'm also saying this complicated thing. So let me do one thing at a time real quick. Come on, gate 21. Where are you at? All right, we'll use this one. Okay, so not self theme of the open ego. Hurt, envy, lack. I get busy trying to prove my worth and value, right? Now, when you're acting from the not self of an open center, any open center, you're in distraction. You're being pulled away from your purpose, right?
Okay.
When you have a hanging gate off of an open center, the not self expresses itself through the flavor of that gate. So another way to say that is on my open ego, because I have an open ego, when I'm getting caught in the, I have to prove my worth and value, it'll take the shape of gate 21. I'll do it in the gate of control kind of way.
Right.
So when I'm trying to prove I have worth and value, I'll be very gate 21-y.
You'll be like, look at how much I can do human things.
Kind of. So here, I'm going to read this to you. Here's gate 21. I hope this is not the fucking site I wanted on. Let me try one other thing. Because I want there's a better description than this thing I just found. Squeeze, I know you want to leave the room. Okay, gate 21, the hunter huntress, the willpower to find and manage resources through control, to be independent and resourceful. Another way to say it, material independence is important for people with gate 21, the gate of the hunter, leaders by nature. They flourish when they're able to control others and when they gain such freedom that no one can control them. The gift of these people to control, everything that is significant in their lives, especially money, food, territory, and lifestyle. They're the archetype of the CEO of the company. They're best when they're in control. They don't like when someone tells them what to do, how to do it. They're demanding by nature. If it comes to their field of responsibility, you will not get confused with them. On the other hand, their control may be excessive, unnecessary. So they just miss control where it really needs to be. Now, here's the other thing. Gate 45, before I go to that. So it's you could say it's correct for me to do all those CEO leadershipy things and be controlling, except that it's hanging off of an open ego. It's not hanging off of a defined center. If it were hanging off of a defined center, it would just be part of who I am.
Right.
And we would say, instead it's
the not self expresses in that way.
It's the lesson of my life. It's the curriculum of my life is that that's how my not self will express.
Shit.
So it's very weird when you have a gate hanging off of an open center. I'm so sorry. This dog, 2 seconds. Come on. You can go. What is your deal? Okay. So it's not as simple when you have a gate hanging off of an open center as it is when it's hanging off a defined center. If it were, since it's off my open ego, if I am in any way, consciously or unconsciously, trying to prove my worth and value, I'm going to get very CEO-y. I'm going to be very controlling, very leadership-y, and it's not going to be correct. However, the gate is there in my chart. So I'm meant to have a relationship with and a learning about and the curriculum. It's a learning for me, this whole leadership, CEO, using force, demanding, that whole thing. The need of people with 21 is to dominate the material plane, to control themselves and others. Control leads them to success and prosperity. This is if it's off a defined ego. It's not for me. The responsible use of willpower is kind of like a summary of it. Is this making sense? Am I making any sense?
I think so. What I'm hearing though is like that sort of double-edged sword of the that is your lesson, but it's also, you know, we want to avoid sort of judgment-based concepts like it's not right or something, but it's your lesson, but it's also, well, but it's also the thing you kind of don't want to be doing because it's the not self theme expressing. So you're like, that's not actually the most in alignment thing.
Yeah.
But then it's still a lesson. So it's like, I guess it's the point being like, yes, move past the need to do that.
Well,
you have the freedom to not do that.
You're free to.
And you might be better off overall not doing that. But when you are doing it, you're also, that's fine because you're learning your lessons.
You're talking about how to not judge yourself for it all.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Or even just how to frame it, that idea of like, well, should I do it or should I not do it?
Well, but that's the point. The answer to should I do it or not do it is follow strategy and authority.
Right. Which would help you just avoid doing it.
You would think. Except that this is the curriculum of my life.
Right. This, again, we come back to the sort of, it's a bit of a, what are those things when they don't?
Think of it, it's just a learning. It's like my whole life is learning about this one thing.
Okay.
How to.
And you literally have one curriculum.
One. And it's, for me, very hard one. Because what's the main thing most people are struggling with? Am I worthy? Am I valuable?
Yeah.
And what do I have to do to prove it or to know it's true? When you have an open ego, I can't express this enough for people. When you have open ego, there is no consistent sense of worth and value. You never feel consistently valuable or worthy.
Yeah.
So it's very hard with an open ego to not be busy proving you're worthy and valuable.
Yeah. I mean, and even us editing the previous chunk that we're going to edit out is because it's sort of a threat to your...
But it's not a threat to me personally.
But to your what you've created.
It's a threat to my business.
Yeah.
And that's just not smart. That's just not smart of me. To put that out is a threat to people's perceptions.
Right.
Affect your business. That's real. That's just smart. Gotcha. Business. But I don't feel personally. The reason I was able to share it all with you is because I'm like, right. Once I cried and broke down, I remembered my worth and value. This is not about me and my worth and value.
Well, I think it's that's a valuable distinction and something to talk about. Like that.
Yeah.
Also what we align ourselves with in terms of what we create or what we put out in the world or what we do as our job or our business isn't really ever even actually also the thing that will prove your worthiness.
Right. So that's, yes, you're totally right. And the thing of, I was feeling all that shame. Remember I talked to you about, so for the listener, since we cut all that out, I'll just say the ways I was bad at being a CEO of life today made me feel very ashamed. So ashamed that I felt like I couldn't talk to my own boyfriend about it. That was the proving of my worth and value. If I hadn't told him, I'd be in the not self of the open ego.
Yeah. And boy, I mean, yeah.
Hold on one sec. Now I have to close the door again. Hold on. You gotta pick a room, sister. So by telling him, I got through the need to prove my worth and value. I just owned my reality and then felt valuable because I told the truth and we connected and he was very kind. Now we're not talking about the specifics of it here because it could have a negative impact on the business and we don't want that.
Right.
But that has nothing to do with my personal sense of, although, come on. It also does.
Like, well, that's the thing. It's impossible for it not to, because we're human beings in a 3D reality. What else do we have to measure it by?
Right. Like you could say you could have an inherent intrinsic sense of worth and value.
Yeah.
And you could judge it based on things like, am I a good person? Have I like by my own, in other words, how do you make it? How is it disconnected from relationships, really?
Yeah.
It can't be, because human life is relationships.
I mean, ultimately, at our core, everybody has worth and value, and everybody matters, and everybody should be valued and held in regard. But so what we have to do is come up with all these little things that help us to, like, again, prove our worth and value, which is too bad, because we actually shouldn't. Have to
well,
do that, or we shouldn't
according
do that.
To human design, they would say only people with definition in the ego are here to prove anything.
No.
Those people are here to prove something, and that's correct for them. But open ego people, if you're proving anything, it's the not self. So in other words, the point of me talking about the whole thing about a gate hanging off of an open center is to say, these are the lessons of my life, how to navigate for me, the use of the ego, when to be in control, when am I to be the CEO, when am I not, when am I to always be the boss, when am I not. These are the lessons of my life, is when is it useful, when is it correct, when is it not. How do you find out the answer to the curriculum of your life? Follow strategy and authority, which is not for me in my ego. It's not even in that center. So at the end of the day, it's like, I thought about this a lot when putting the play together. You know, 3 years now since I had this idea to do this thing, I've been like, I'm not going to do this from the not self of the open ego. I don't want to start a theater company to prove something to anybody.
Yeah.
I want to do it because I want to do it. I have correct emotional authority, yes, on it.
And you have the energy to do it. And you have, isn't that the other thing?
It makes me feel like myself. I have energy for it and it's satisfying.
Yeah.
And it is all those things.
Yeah. And that list that you just gave us is specific to you, right?
That's specific to generators.
To generators. Oh, okay. So that's a big, big swath of us.
Yeah. So 60% of the population, generators and manifesting generators, the only three real relevant questions they say, if we're oversimplifying everything, is, do I have energy for it? Does it make me feel more like myself? And is it satisfying? That's only for generators, not projectors, not reflectors, not manifestors. So I really sat with that for 3 years because this is a big move. And it is. You know what the part that isn't? Is the fucking money part. And that's, now let's come back to human design. I have gate 21, but I don't have 45. The one that if you had it, it would form a channel. When that channel gets formed, it's called the money channel. So let's learn a thing. Everywhere you have a gate hanging, it's pointing at another gate that is empty.
Right.
Okay. Whatever your gates are pointing at, they are looking for that other energy, going, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? So my 21, my CEO, my bossiness, my want to be in control at all costs.
Your eightness.
Is looking for who has the money. For really. And when you meet the right people, it forms, like if I run into the right gate 45 having people who happen to define my ego and create a channel there. Together, we will make a lot of money because together that channel is formed.
I'm going to guess we don't form that channel, you and
no,
me.
No, we do not. I'll tell you something. I had it happen with someone in Florida who I had that channel with, and it was really interesting how fucking true it was. He was a comedian, and I produced a comedy show, and he ended up being the person who would bring me other comedians. He had me in touch with all the other comedians in the world of comedy in that part of the world. And that show made money every time because of me and him together. I produced it and did all the producery shit, and he knew the people and funneled them to me. And I chose them each time. And there we were making money.
And in your Human Design, did you two connect those lines?
Oh, we knew. Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, but you didn't even have to. It just happened.
Yeah.
I looked at it after the fact because I went, well, this is working very well.
Yeah. And just for the listener, the phrase comedy show and makes money, not a thing.
Not all the time. Sometimes.
Not much of the time. Sometimes, apparently.
Stand-up shows can make a fair amount of money for the venue, not for the comedian.
Right.
Because ticket sales plus bar plus.
Yeah.
Don't pay the comedians a lot. Because then.
Oh, the artists. Always the last to get paid.
That's true.
Except for the producer, who is often the last to make to get paid.
It depends.
Yeah, that's.
Hey, what's up? Rami here. It's been a minute since I've recorded one of these. So I just booked my plane tickets to Europe. I'm going to take a little trip to Europe a little bit later. I'm going to go see my friend's concert in Prague. And then I'm going to travel with my friends, a couple. So my friend is a composer, but he also just had a memoir come out. It's not in English, it's in German. And he's going to be doing some book readings from his memoir, including one in a concentration camp in Austria. And he said that he really needs his partner, my other friend, with him for support in the concentration camp reading, because no surprise to anyone, it's going to be really meaningful and hard. And so then I said to his partner, hey, do you need me for support? Because she's going to be supporting him. Does she need to be supported? And I say that also because she hates Austria. Austria is hella racist, and she's had really terrible times there in the past. And she always has to go because she's married to an Austrian. Anyway, so for that reason, I am coming with them. I'm coming with them on their whole trip, which includes a couple book readings, including one of them in a concentration camp. And also, I've never been to a concentration camp. That's cool, right? Like, that should be something to be seen. Cool is a funny word to use, I understand. So I was like talking about my itinerary in a conversation this morning. And in the conversation, I had a major revelation. It's stupid. I had a major revelation that had not yet occurred to me. I am a quarter Austrian Jew. That was my big revelation. So just, you know, to keep track of my ethnicity. So I am half Haitian. I am a quarter Austrian Jew, and I am a quarter either Russian or Ukrainian Jew. I say either because the borders are funny and it's hard to know. So I'm either Russian Jew or Ukrainian Jew, whichever, it doesn't really matter. So that's my ethnic breakdown. Now, a major course of study in my life has been Haitian dance and music and religion. And I've been to Haiti multiple times. I have family there. I cook Haitian food. Et cetera, et cetera. I've even been to the place in West Africa where a lot of Haitian ancestry comes from. I also know that I'm Jewish, and I have an affinity with a lot of Jewish things, including Fiddler on the Roof, for example. You know, they live in a shtetl, and I know that some of my ancestors lived in a shtetl like that. But I'll tell you, it never, like, when I hear Haiti in the news, I'm like, oh, my heart, my people, oh, my people are suffering, because unfortunately the news is usually about Haitian suffering. You know, my people are suffering. Now, when I hear Russia or Ukraine in the news, which it is all the fucking time, right? It has never occurred to me to say, oh, my people are suffering. I never thought that. It never occurred to me that I had a connection to Russia like that, or the Ukraine, or both, or Austria, right? It's so funny because the separation was so complete. I have no evidence of being from there. I have no evidence of being from there. I feel like I have more evidence of being from West Africa, even despite the slave trade. I feel like I have more evidence of being from West Africa than I do of being from Austria or Russia / Ukraine. And maybe that's because the Jews were sort of their own separate peoples anyway, so they weren't really connected to the rest of the population. I'm not, whatever, we can speculate, but it's just like, it was wild to be in conversation with someone today and go like, oh shit, I am an Austrian Jew and I am going to a concentration camp in Austria. What? Rami's rules.
What are some of your curriculum gates?
I'd have to look.
I could also pull it up for you if you know your...
Yeah, why don't you pull it up?
All right.
Because you're good at that. You have mine probably somewhere in there.
Nope.
Nope.
Do you know your birth time?
Yep.
What is it?
It is... now I forgot. I think it's... Yep.
I want to come back to the worth and value topic about... We kind of didn't finish that one. I want to come back to that.
No, I think it's a big one. I don't know. I think that's very worth discussing more.
Oh, you have the right angle cross of Eden.
Yes, I do.
Okay, I need to read that. We need to talk about that. Wow, I did not put that together. Wow. Okay, hold on. Have you read about that? You must have.
Uh-uh. I have 46 and 25. Oh, and 11 and 47. Those are my curriculi.
Okay, a different one. Okay, that's why. That I would have. Okay. You have the right angle cross of Eden 2, which is different from the one I was thinking, the right angle cross of Eden. Thank God, because that one's rough. All right. So before we get into your cross, you've got one, two, three, four
yep.
pieces of curriculum.
Yep. That's not too intimidating.
No. And the fact that, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, now I'm just sucked in. Okay. As a reminder for the listener, gates that you have. So Cass, when you look at your sacromotor or your emotional center or your throat, you see all those gates that are hanging off your define centers. Yeah. Those are aspects of you. Those are parts of Cassidy. So you have 55 as part of you and 49 and 6 and 27 and 42 and 3 and 9. You got all these aspects of self that you could read about. Those aspects of self hanging off the defined centers are looking across to the opposite side going, where's my 19? Where's my 39?
Ah, so then read up on those too to see what they're seeking.
Yeah, so that you can not judge yourself ever again for not having the other side.
Ah.
So what we judge ourselves for in this life mostly is all the empty gates across from our hanging gates.
Which are coming, the ones that are coming off of our established, off of our defined.
Really, any empty gate across from any gate.
Ah.
There is an energy where that gate, the energy of that gate is looking for that empty one.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, you will unconsciously judge yourself for not having it. So you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 ways you could judge yourself for not having the thing across from the thing you do have.
Ah, all right.
Good homework to look into.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, though, when we're looking at what are the life lessons that Cassidy's going to bump into again and again, it's 25, 46, 11, and 47.
Okay.
So those would be good pieces of homework to look into.
Yeah.
I forget that you have single definition. That's interesting. And you're a 1-3 and you have emotional authority. Forget that too.
I don't know.
Okay, let's just read your incarnation cross, which, remember, speaks to what is your day-to-day life filled with when you're functioning correctly as yourself. Right angle cross of Eden 2. Your cross has the energy and drive to go and explore the world, but it really isn't just about you. This is the energy that compels you to bring others along on your exploration. This is the force that led us out of the Garden of Eden. This energy also has ties to art and bringing expression into form. This cross can go through a period of sadness as there is a lot in the world that is not Eden-like. But fear not the drive to lead or share. Your sense of exploration will come through because that is what you are here to do.
Okay. Yeah, I think I've read that before for sure. I remember that. That sounds familiar to me. That just sounds fun. That sounds like a pretty fun assignment. You know, like, oh, great, cool. That sounds, what a good time.
Which kind of sounds like you.
Yeah.
You're pretty fun.
A good time. I sound like a good time.
Pretty fun and light, and that does seem to match to me the energy of you.
Yeah.
By comparison, let's look at mine so you get, we can learn about just how different these are. So we heard a fun one. Now let's hear mine. Oh, God damn, this is the wrong one.
The left angle cross of industry.
Industry. The energy of this cross is to be industrious.
Fuck.
There's a strong desire to be busy and see that others are busy. The drive for this busyness is the goal to bring people together. Your belief is that in doing this work, we will all come together. The trick for you is to make sure you follow strategy and use your busyness in response instead of trying to outright manifest.
Yeah, that doesn't sound as fun to me.
It's pretty industrious, though.
Yeah, that sounds like a little bit of a should.
No, if it were for you, it would be a should.
Right, exactly. That's why it sounds like a should to me.
Right.
You should be busier. You should be more industrious.
Yeah, and this one, yours sounds to me like, yeah, but then what do you get done?
Exactly. Nothing. I agree. This is a problem I have. This might be the core of the challenge of who I am is like.
But is it a challenge and is it wrong? Are you supposed to get anything done?
Yeah, no, because someone else is getting it done and I'm going to explore it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to show other people, hey, look at this.
Yep.
This is why I don't want to be the boss.
Yeah.
But I love to like conduct people in a direction. I love to coach people, which I feel like is part of that like exploration, like leading others in exploration, you know, even facilitating things is kind of a version of that. I feel like.
Totes.
But I'm not going to fucking make it happen or even organize it.
Yeah.
I do. I do that too, but it's not my jam.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, lucky you not having the gate 21 off an open ego.
Oh, God.
Makes me want to look up.
Why do they have a picture of a man with a rifle? Oh, because it's the hunter.
The hunter. True purpose of gate 21, if you follow your strategy and authority and thus unleash the potential of the gate. Deep desire for independence, self-reliance, financial freedom. You really blossom when you're given control. At the same time, very sensitive to control from the outside. Quite often with gate 21, you want to be your own boss and work independently. Surprise, surprise. You have a desire to satisfy your material needs and have a willingness to work for it if you live according to strategy and authority. You're also potentially generous in meeting the material needs of your own community. It's true. With gate 21, you have the strength to push through difficult situations and not give up. You need clear deals, then there's peace and contentment and balance. Totally true. The not self quality, here we go, of gate 21, if you do not follow strategy and authority, but base your decision on your mind's command, then you are the total control freak who wants to mentally control every aspect of life and exert control and dominance over other people in your life. With gate 21, you're under mental pressure to prove yourself all the time at work, in bed, at school, in relationships, etc. So that's what I mean by that's when the not self is expressing itself.
Right.
When I get caught by the not self of the open ego, that's what it'll look like. Control and dominance over the people in my life and the mental pressure to prove through control and dominance. But these are the qualities that are great and that I have to learn to lean into.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank God. I think without you doing that, lots would not happen. We need your industriousness. We were going to pick up a little bit of this idea that we were talking about, which was like the idea that your worth is.
Yes.
Is caught up.
Well, you were saying, yeah. So you were like, well, how does a human being assess their worth and value how is it shown to us, if not right. but from the outside things we're doing?
Yeah. And I mean, I'm saying that as more of a statement of how I think that the most of the 3D world culture works, not necessarily of my own belief system.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not saying, well, how do you do it? But it's true. Like, what, let's ask that theoretically. How do we don't prove, you don't prove your worth. That's the thing. The moment you have to prove your worth, you're already sort of off track.
Caught in the not self, if you have an open ego.
Yeah. But if you have a defined ego, you do want to prove your worth. You want to establish your credentials.
You're here to prove something.
Okay.
Yeah. You've got stuff to prove.
If you have
definition in the ego. So I can't even say it as succinctly as, or I should say as specifically as you're trying to prove your worth and value. It's more the energy of defined ego is like, I am willing to bleed and die for this thing, and I am sticking to it until the end, no matter what. And I will prove to you that I can do this, and I have done it. I will prove that it can be done. I will prove that we can win the soccer game. I will prove to you that I'm the best singer because I'm Madonna, right?
Right.
Now, they're not proving their worth and value. They have something to prove.
Uh-huh.
Proving your worth and value is an issue that is had by open ego people.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Defined ego people don't tend to get caught in that so much. They're like, yes, I'm valuable. Now, what are we doing?
Yeah.
That's.
Let me prove to you that I'm the best at this. But that's not about your worth and value necessarily.
And to be fair, too, I work with plenty of people who have definition in the ego and have tons of proving they're doing that is not helping them. So it's not black and white. But I do notice it's a really different kind of, I wonder how I can, let me just sit with this for a second because I have the energy of it in my body. Yeah, it's very hard to articulate. Okay, I'll put it this way. They teach it like this in human design. People with definition in the ego, it's very important that they follow strategy and authority because if you make a choice to commit to something too soon, like let's say you have emotional authority, like you and I both have,
uh-huh.
and you're meant to follow the emotional wave up and down, up and down, up and down until you're like, yeah, mostly yes.
Yeah.
Right? Or mostly no.
Yeah.
But I've been at the height of the wave, at the base of the wave, and now I'm kind of like, ah, right, okay, sure. That's how we choose. That's what's correct for emotional authority people. Now, let's say you had emotional authority and a defined ego. The defined ego means when you commit to something, when you've said yes, you are doing it to the end until it is done, and I will not be able to pry your grippy hands off of it. So because the...
Oh, I think Denise... Does Denise have defined ego? Anyway.
Let's look it up.
Go on.
So, you don't want to commit to things with defined ego too soon because you will see them through to the end and hate your life because you're not giving up.
Right.
Your ego said yes and it's doing it.
Yeah.
But you're going to be miserable if it wasn't correct. However, so that's what it's like with definition in the ego. Let's say you have emotional authority. So you're meant to follow the wave and you go, mostly yes or mostly no by the end of the wave. And you have open ego. You don't want to commit too soon because if you commit too soon and you say yes, now you'll have no consistent energy to do the thing at all. You won't care.
Why did I say I would do this?
Uh-huh. And then you'll bail and that's its own problem. So you want to wait before you commit until you're like, yeah, okay, I'll do that. And you know you have the energy for it consistently.
Yeah, I am definitely a wait to commit person.
So two very... Totally. But like you could see the difference in the flavor of person, right?
Yeah.
One person gets stuck in it and they don't have the energy to follow through with it. And they just probably bail or really want to bail.
Yeah.
But can't bail.
Yeah.
The other person can't even think about bailing, but is miserable because it was incorrect in the first place.
Right. to be a human on this planet.
I know. Strategy and authority is so much harder than we... We're just like, just learn strategy and authority and you'll be all good.
Just do it. It's fine.
Okay, what else? What else do we want to cover?
Well, something we said earlier when we decided not to keep the recording, we were talking about how you were going through a lot of shame and embarrassment.
Yeah.
And part of it was that you hadn't shared it with your partner, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that was intense. But then sharing it helped a lot. Am I wrong?
It made it. Oh, yeah. It took all the shame away.
Yeah.
It brought us closer together. It helped me get my needs met.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were talking about how it's like that huntress, the control freak, the CEO wants to, what I want to do is manage all my problems, solve it all on my own, and then come back and tell him how great a job I did.
And I'm embarrassed that I haven't accomplished that. And I'm ashamed.
Full of shame and embarrassment if I have to come for help before I already handled it on my own. But that's the not self of the open ego, trying to prove my worth and value by already having it controlled through the gate of 21, the huntress.
Yep.
So you see, if someone else had an open ego, but a different hanging gate off the open ego, they would be doing their prove my worth and value differently than I do.
Yeah.
That's the flavor mine takes because I got that 21. It's very Enneagram 8 flavor. So yeah, to your point though, how good it feels to open it.
Yeah. And and you also said another thing you said was about like in 12-step rooms, one of the phrases is you're only as sick as your secrets. Is that it?
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm just that it becomes a broken record at a certain point, but boy, does just saying the thing just make a difference. Thing that you're dreading, the thing that you're ashamed of, the thing that you're feeling like you can't say because it's going to hurt somebody. Or because it'll hurt you or hurt your standing with them or all those things. And it's true. There's going to be times where you're like, I have to tell my boss I cheated or something. And then you might get fired. So, yes, it could damage things too.
Yeah.
Or at least cause difficulty. But I'm also trying to think of, because I don't want to share very much because I'm actually, not for the first time, I've kept lots private, but I'm very... trying to keep something private life, but I do want to share something about it, which is, you know, I will say that I've gone to Katie for the first time offline in like 5, 6, 7 years.
Yeah.
As a healing client, I've done plenty on here on the podcast, but not much offline. And it's about a subject that I'm keeping kind of close to the vest because it's much deeper and more personal that I want to share publicly. But what I will say is what sort of triggered it even being dealt with was something between myself and another person that was poisoning the air a little bit.
Right.
And it was incredibly, what was finally shared should have actually made things more awkward or painful, you'd think.
Yeah.
But what it actually did was make things so much better and so much more smooth between us.
Yeah.
And it hurts. The thing that was shared still was like, ow, that hurts.
Yeah.
But now it's there. It's there and I can see it and I can look at it. And now I can stop wondering and feeling weird about the energy between us. And I'll bet you Eric was probably, Chauncey, whatever the fuck his name is, was probably like, I know there's something that you're not sharing with me and it doesn't feel good between us, I wonder.
Well, it was more like, we talked about that too. It was more like he was like, huh. He's like, it's just better to, he felt better because there was a ton of stuff he hadn't said on the same topic.
Yes.
And so by me, this is the whole takeaway for everybody, I hope. By me saying the thing, this is what I'm always saying to my students in class, and it's hard for everybody to get it. I get it. By me saying the thing I didn't want to say because I felt shame around it, it opened him up to say the things he hasn't been saying because of shame.
Say it with your full chest.
Say it with your chest. And be your fucking best friend. We were talking about,
we're making references to things that we cut out of the podcast today. So everything's a reference to something before.
Ariana Grande's song has been in my head for 24 hours. Yes, and. And we were talking about, what does say it with your chest mean? And I thought it was like, come get me, bitch. You want to fight? And I was saying to Ariana Grande, girl, you're small.
Right.
Why are you picking fights with the audience? But then you were telling me.
It just means say it big and proud, with your full chest, your full voice.
So in saying the vulnerable thing, I didn't want to say that had all the shame on it. It opened him up and he said all the things. And now nobody feels like we're holding anything back and there's shame on it.
Girl, yes, yes. Let that be a thing. And I know it's hard. It's fucking hard to tell the truth. God, I've some of my dearest friends have like a couple of topics that have just become off limits for like 15 years of their marriage.
No, no, no.
And I just, it hurts me every single day to witness the off-limitness of it.
That's hard.
And in a lot of ways, they're okay. Like they do all right. They love each other. They look after each other. And they take care of each other and all those things. But you can just feel this. It is the elephant in the room and it is never not there.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
In my mind.
Yeah.
It's not so much the topic isn't never not there, but the fact that they're not talking about that topic is never not there.
Can you give an example of that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the dead bedroom concept. It's the problem, you know, longtime married couples, for example, will just stop being intimate.
Mm-hmm.
And some people will, you know, accept it or they'll deal with it. And that's fine. That's great. Especially if they acknowledge it and say, this has happened.
Yeah.
And I still love you and that's okay.
Yeah.
But I do have some friends who that's happened to, but they will literally never discuss it.
Yeah.
So it exists as a...
As an energy.
Thing that has never been resolved mm-hmm. or has never been come to terms with or has never been made peace with. It could be made peace with. That it's okay to stop whatever.
Yeah.
If you've looked each other in the eye and gone, I love you and we don't do this anymore.
Yep.
But
yeah, man.
But it hurts me to watch this sort of vibration just sort of be there hanging. It's a hanging chad of life.
Yep.
Yeah.
Have you seen that on another topic? Like, is there another topic where you've seen that show up or is it?
I'm sure.
Because there's this another saying in 12 Steps. We talked about you're only as sick as your secrets. Another one I like is it's either money or honey.
Those are the only two topics that exist.
It's like sponsors joke about what do your sponsees call you about money or honey? Because it's true. It's either about a romantic relationship problem / sex or money.
Wow.
Always.
And that's it.
Like, think of a problem that isn't one of those things.
Parents.
That's honey.
That's relationship. Yeah, it's either relationship or survival. I mean, that's why, because it boils down to the two.
Yeah.
Because money equals security / shelter / food, and honey equals sanity, emotional love, wellness,
connection.
Love, connection.
Mm-hmm. Relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are we missing? Like, what is there? Is there something in the like spiritual realm that exists outside of that?
You tell me. What's an example? I haven't found one yet.
Yeah, I can't.
I don't think there is. Yeah.
That's true.
This is why the thing of like the little saying of if you know one thing well, or if you know one thing intimately, you know all things, or to know one thing well is to know all things. Because like all those years in 12-step, you work with sponsees long enough and you realize everybody's problems are one of two things, money or honey. And that's true outside of the 12-step rooms. That's called being a person.
Yeah.
There's so much shit that like gets taught in AA that addicts identify as being part of an addict's problem. But then when you leave, you realize, no, it's called being a person. That's a person's problem. Addicts just have a more extreme version of normal people problems. And that's the gift of it, because you end up facing all your normal people problems in a way that normal people are slower to face.
Because you're in, yeah, because you have to. You have to survive. Another reference to our previously recorded but deleted conversation, we'll be more cagey about it. Someone we know is an artistic director of a theater company and—
Not me, a different person.
Not you, a different artistic director of a different theater company, one with a little more resources, but still it does boil down to, I'm excited to do the art, honey, which I would say is the relational part of possibility. Mm. And that's its own challenges, all the challenges of creating art, which is, I'd say, the relational world.
Right.
And then, but first I have to make sure that the building is still standing.
Right.
And that's money.
Right.
So everything does boil down to money or honey.
Yeah.
That's it.
I mean,
oh my God.
Really?
Yeah, really. But where does spirit live in that?
Well, what do you mean though? What do you mean?
I don't know. I feel like those are both material 3D world things.
Mm-hmm.
But we're...
Well, spirit is the solution to all things.
Okay.
So like when a sponsor gets a problem from a sponsee, they'll be like, cool, work steps 2 through 7 around that and then come back to me. And then usually work a 10 step on that. And then the sponsee will call you back and be like, oh, I saw that my part in it was this and I hadn't been honest. So I called her and we talked and now it's better.
Yeah.
So spirit is the solution. When you work a spiritual program, quote, quote, or get back into your spiritual alignment or function from spiritual principles. And sometimes that's just as simple as truth. Truth is a spiritual principle. Then you have connection again. And then usually the money starts to flow again. So spirit is the solution. Spirit is the doorway to the solution to the question about money or honey. But if you have a problem is money or honey.
Does that mean that so let's talk about things like demons and entities and Shaitan and other energies. That's a problem.
Right.
But it actually is still going to manifest as a problem in the 3D world as well. Meaning,
no, those are their own unique, weird, other dimensional kinds of problems.
Right.
I don't think those fall under money or honey. We're talking about just normal 3D problems.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But like entities, demons, that's possession. That's some woo-woo shit.
Yeah. I think that's what I was getting at. It's like, I see. What about the internal world or the alternate world or the world beyond that we're actually trying to get to and trying to achieve or reach some kind of connection to?
Okay, what I believe is you can have a very deep connection to spirit and still, because we're human, you never get to escape the whole being pulled by the ego and the mind, and the human design language would be being pulled by the not self. So it's when we get pulled by the not self or the ego or the mind, we have to go, wait a minute, what's the spiritual principle? How do I function spiritually here? And that brings you back to center, and then the problems with money and honey can resolve. So... Now, but if you have a problem that's because of a demon or an entity or possession, you need an energy healer.
Right.
That's a whole different thing. That's like you need a wizard. Need
money
to pay that to energy pay healer.
So it is a money problem.
Money and honey's involved. Yeah. No. I
yeah.
Just
either
mean,
you need to pay them, or you need to give them a little honey. Fuck them.
Yeah.
That's a good.
Oh my God. Speaking of fucking energy healers.
Okay.
Peter Notrieb's play, The Totalitarian. So we're in rehearsal, so we'll be talking about this a fair amount for the next few weeks here on the podcast. Some of the funniest shit I have heard. You forget. You should like reread that play.
Yeah.
It is so fucking funny. Okay. There's a running bit where the Ben character, the young revolutionary character, is constantly thinking that places he's in are microphoned are being tapped.
Right.
By the evil overlords that are listening to his conversations. So there's a scene in the park with his doctor buddy where the revolutionary kid is delivering the like secret intel about what the big secret operation is really doing. And then when he finishes delivering that to distract the listening ears, because they must be listening, right? The microphones are there in his paranoid brain. He says, okay, now that we've finished that, take this condom and fuck me now here in this park. Let's go over there and fuck now. And the other character's like, yes, because all we are doing is fucking. Fucking is all we care about. Thank goodness we get to fuck now in this park. You know, because they're...
Right.
And there's a bunch... That bit comes up a couple times. There's a scene in the doctor's office where he's like, how is my colon, doctor? Your colon is clean and healthy. You know, when really they're talking about conspiracies and shit. Came up in rehearsal today.
Yeah. With who?
Cheers. Because
I was playing the role that the guy who was...
Casey.
So Casey is playing the role I played, and he had previously played the other role, the revolutionary.
Yeah. So Ben, a human being named Ben, is playing the role named Ben.
That's nice.
Whereas in the past, Casey played Ben in your production.
Uh-huh.
And you played current Casey's role.
Which is named?
Jeffrey,
right.
So today we were working a bit And Casey made a choice and I was taking notes and we went back at the end and I'm giving my notes and I was like, by the way, you should keep that thing you did. That was so funny. And he was like, yeah, I stole that from Cassidy.
Nice. I'll take it.
Yeah. And he goes, he's the bit maker. I go, fuck yeah, he is.
That is high praise coming from Casey Worthington.
Isn't it?
Very funny man. He has a whole...
So funny.
Pod, I mean, YouTube, bunch of great funny sketches. Yeah. I don't even remember that.
Like... Years ago.
Years ago. This is like 10 years ago we did this play.
2016.
8 years ago we did this play. I just did math in my head. It's a funny play and weirdly similar to the play I just did that was 12 years old or something. The one I did back in March.
Yeah.
Which was about politics and political shit.
Yeah.
And it's more relevant now than it was then.
Yeah.
Like you'd think that it would have at least shifted to a different relevancy.
Yeah.
It can still be fucked up in a different way. And the Totalitarians is about basically an idiotic, ridiculous, absurd caricature of a human being, woman, being elected to Congress, right?
Well, it's being elected to lieutenant governor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, being just in an election situation.
Uh-huh.
Being put in high office and the whole absurdity of how that happens. And he wrote it in response to the Tea Party movement, which was ridiculous at the time.
And the Sarah Palin moment.
And the Sarah Palin moment. And there was another person at that time, too, who was like a witch and a weird, but she wasn't, not a good witch. She was a bad witch. And she was super conservative and weird. And now we have, like, what are the two?
Trump.
Well, we have Trump. But we also have, just to make it more specifically, like crazy women, too,
yeah.
Who like have no business saying anything.
Yeah.
But they're really good at talking to other people somehow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's all. The fact is like it's still happening. Exactly what he wrote about is still happening.
Oh, yeah. It's like more relevant than it was when it was written.
Well,
when
he wrote it, it was before Trump was a hot topic.
Right before. The election was right there.
But the election was happening when we were performing it and people all thought we were talking about Trump. And in fact, some people got mad at us for doing it or like walked out of talkbacks. They're like, well, you have no respect. I was like, this play is not written about that guy, though it was totally written about that guy. I can't help it if he's fulfilling the caricature.
I mean, in rehearsal, it's been really incredible to we keep stopping and being like, Jesus, this play. Like, first of all, it's super prescient. It's ahead of its time. It called the future in an amazing way.
Yeah.
Secondly, the comedy is not, it has not lost any of its clip.
No.
It holds up so well.
Yeah.
Thirdly, the play, like, is this crazy specific microcosm of the macrocosm of everything about reality. It seems to talk about everything. And it's got, like, the rage of like losing faith in your government. And then it's got when your mother betrays you. And then it's got like, oh, but you're blowing it out of proportion. And then you're the conspiracy theorist. No, I am. And then this is true. No, that is. It has just, it's got so much depth and so much comedy. It's very incredible. One of the things we're up against that's in a fun way in rehearsal is like, how there are two layers operating all the time in this play. There's very real, grounded things these people are saying to each other that you have to really understand what you're saying and really commit and hear what your partner is saying. Like, they're saying very real, meaningful things.
Yeah.
And it's hilarious and fast. So there's this, like, depth under the water, and then there's this rhythm that has to happen, and they're simultaneous.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Do you have someone hired to do your blood effects?
Okay, so funny you ask. You want to do it? No, because we were just...
No, but I could probably point you towards somebody.
The customer and I were just talking about it tonight. We have a working solution. I'm not sure I want to say it here to ruin the effect.
No, you won't. But I mean, I know the main one that you have to do that happens on the podium.
At the end?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
That requires some actual technology to pull off.
Wait, which, I don't know what you're talking about. Say it and we'll cut it.
Okay, let's return to our conversation. Boop, and then you and I will talk about this separate.
Yeah. So
anyway, you got to get. There's some blood effects in this show that are need doing.
Yeah, it's not the thing you said, but it's
okay.
We're coming up with some solutions that because we don't have people who do the laundry every night, so we can't do
right
that thing, but we can do other things.
Yes. Good.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, I just want to wrap up this episode because I need to pass out.
Yeah, you're exhausted.
By saying this, I want to own this for our public. I need your help. I need you guys to go to the GoFundMe page and please fucking please, for God's sake, can you donate to this play? Also, come see the play. It's very funny. Cassidy did it. I'm directing it. These actors are so funny. Sixthlinestudios.org to get your tickets. There's a discount code that if you message us, if you email us at
allanswerspod@gmail.com,
I will give you the discount code for cheaper tickets. If you want just normal price tickets, sixthlinestudios.org and click ticks. And then if you can click the GoFundMe link that's attached to this episode, it would really, really help a lot. We could use your help.
There's somebody out there who just, you know what? Yeah. Yes, I mean it. You should give $1,000. That one person that I'm talking to right now.
Yes.
Just go give $1,000.
We really need your help. Like, yeah. There's a lot of really talented people putting this thing together, and we can't do it without you guys. We really can't.
Yep. So.
Thank you.
Yeah. You're going to pull it off, but.
Thanks, man.
You need to. People, it'd be great if a couple big people big pulled up their big britches and stepped up in a big way because we just need help.
Yeah. It's just true.
We're doing all this, giving this gift to y'all, and we love to do it, and we'll continue to doing it. It's not a conditional. It's not transactional. However.
The art, you mean?
No, I'm talking about the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
It's a gift.
Yeah.
We've been giving this gift to people for 4 years, and I think that's a beautiful thing.
Thanks, man. That's a good point.
Yeah. And that's okay. We live in a world where we're a community, so sometimes we need help from the others.
Please help us. Help, help, help. Go fund me. Please, please go now and fund me.
Go fund yourself, everybody.
I love you guys.
I love you to pieces, Katie. Be well. Do your work.
Do your work. I love you too, Boo. Thank you for waiting for me. I love you.
I always will.
Okay.
I don't know if that's true. Bye.
Open ego. Don't make promises.
That's right. What are you asking for? All of the answers. Say what? All of the answers.
Yeah, all the answers. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
Yeah, I stole that from Cassidy.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.